By that point, bitch, I had dealt with all sides of plain Jane, so that was like the least surprising comment that's coming out of her mouth.
EW podcast is right. Fierce,
fierce, fierce. I love this podcast.
Fierce, fierce. Weather, fierce. Food, fierce. Then weather.
Soup, soup. Alphabet soup.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Emma love alphabet soup. Cause if Emma eat enough of this stuff, I'll learn the alphabet.
Hello, I'm Joey Nolfi, Entertainment Weekly's RuPaul's Drag Race reporter and author of the memoir, Chain Reaction, When Twink Necklaces Go Clink. Here to write the first ever audio novel out loud in the moment that won't be recorded to a page because this podcast defies all expectations and rules of literature.
I thought you were going to say House of Hidden Memings. And I'm Jillian Cederholm, EW's news director, author of the memoir, How I Became a Haunted Doll Named Jacaranda, a memoir written from the great beyond by Jillian Closet.
I understood none of what you just said.
Well, I guess you are not literate enough to read my memoir then.
Clocked. Clocked. Not a soul can clock except Jillian Closet. Jillian Clock It. Well, today we are taking a break from our co-book signings to broadcast from the Sesame Street Soup Kitchen, where we're serving up ladies of piping up. No, wait.
What?
Oh my God. Okay, keep that in because I just misread. This is, in case you can't tell, this is another week where Jillian Closet has written the script. And, this is my second ever read through of it. I'm going to try that again because I mistook the word ladles for ladies. Today, we are taking a break from our co-book signings to broadcast from the Sesame Street Soup Kitchen, where we're serving up ladles, not ladies, of piping hot alphabet soup in honor of a queen with the shortest name in Drag Race history.
Joey, do you agree with this conspiracy theory about Q's placement that's been going around?
Okay, now wait a minute. You have to. You can't ask me the question without introducing the theory.
Okay, I will now introduce the theory.
Having anxiety about all day because I was like, Jillian, am I supposed to know what you're talking about? And she was like, oh, it's nothing complex. And then you just drop me into the matrix of theories.
So this theory about Q's placement has been going around on the internet. I see it pop up a lot, including recently. But the first time I noticed it was actually a few years ago.
What?
When comedian and top three SNL writers Julio Torres tweeted, I think it was in like 2018 or 2019, the letter Q comes up way too early in the alphabet. We're not ready for it where it's currently placed. It belongs with fellow avant-garde acts X, Y, and Z deep in after the mainstream. And if you Google Q alphabet, you do see a lot of tweets saying that Q actually should come up way closer to XYZ than where it currently does. Thoughts?
So are you saying that Q would then be the fourth last to last letter in the alphabet?
Yeah.
It would be ZYXQ. But then Z, that wouldn't be
no,
fourth
I don't
place,
know. Definitely
Jillian?
Not last. No, it would be like Q, X, Y, Z.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just read it backwards. So in this scenario, this whole insane scenario, you are saying that Z is actually the first letter in the alphabet because then Q is fourth?
No, fourth from the last. Like we're saying that A, B, C, yes, those are top line. Those are like opening alphabets. Then you get to like L and M and N. That's like prime letter territory. Like those are the mainstream. And then you get to XYZ. Those are like kind of like, you know, afterthought kind of letters. And I think Q, how often are we using the letter Q unless we're talking about this season
yes,
of
but
Drag
are you
Race?
Equating it to placement, fourth placement, the only way that this can be. I'm done with this. I'm done.
That went on much longer than I anticipated.
I am done. This is the dumbest theory I've ever heard in my life.
All right. Well, speaking of dumb, Elmo, how's the alphabet soup?
Hot, 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 hot.
after our final dose of morphine, or as my dear friend's husband called it while we were watching Drag Race 2 weeks ago, called her Motrin, accidentally called her Motrin. The four remaining queens are tallying up their wins. Plain and Saphira are now tied at 4 each, while Nymphia and Q both have 2 and are itching for another. After sharing friendly-ish fire with Q, Plain says she finally feels free to be the happy version of herself now that they got rid of, quote, the rabble and the scraps. So the happy version of herself apparently also punches down at queens who can't fight back. But Rue interrupts to introduce the mini-challenge in which the queens dunk their faces fully into a kiddie pool while lip-syncing to Mama Rue's Kitty Girl, like a time-traveling kitten, or what did we say the other week?
Oh, yeah. I was a kitten in the 80s.
Kitten in the 80s. Saphira then shows off her ample new bosom, but won't reveal where it came from. She shakes her upgraded floaties in the water and also does an underwater wig reveal, which leads to her winning this mini challenge. Then we also get a close-up shot of Plain's hairy thighs and a wedgie. But I also really died at Plain saying RuPaul is trying to waterboard us, which I feel like has been an internet joke for the past like 10 years. And they finally let it on air. That is so funny. I laughed so, that might be the hardest that I've laughed at anything Plain has said all season when she said that. It was really, really funny. Rue then informs them of the semifinals maxi dress challenge inspired by his own memoir and current book tour. They have to write stories inspired by their lives, come up with a catchy title, shoot a book cover, and get interviewed by, quote, award-winning podcaster Matt Rogers to plug their books. Plain is having a slight meltdown because she reads social media posts, not books, and says she prefers to keep things lighthearted and haha when it comes to drag. While Nymphia is fully freaking out after wishing for absolutely no writing or comedy challenges to ensure another win, to set off steam, she spends her confessional doing fart noises on her forearm just to further this season's gassy motif. And while she's making fart jokes about her title, Breaking Wind, Saphira also makes a Whoopi Goldberg reference in the confessional saying, "You in danger, girl," which further fuels my conspiracy, which is not actually a conspiracy, about Whoopi's farting legacy on The View.
That's a conspiracy.
Well, actually, it's just rooted in fact.
Well, I mean, her name is literally Whoopi.
Well, she did say she named herself after a Whoopi cushion. Miss Karen Johnson. Okay, now there is a demo, first ever in the history of EW's Quick Drag podcast. There is a demo note, demo, hosts do forearm farts. Do you mean elbow fart?
No, she did it on her forearm.
Okay, you do it.
Well, you can do it in your elbow if you want. I don't know if you have deodorant there. Your turn.
It sounded like your forearm fart laughed at the top of its... it was like... Woo-hoo.
It did.
It was like a little ghosty. I have long sleeves on.
Take it off.
Wait, where do I do it? Oh, that's orange. Where do I do it?
On your forearm. How are you better at doing an armpit fart than just blowing on your arm?
There's no deodorant on this. Let's talk about the mini challenge. I really liked it. I thought it felt like those like silly early season mini challenges. I thought it was so stupid and so funny, and it reminded me of like the visuals reminded me of the one where they're on the beach. And they're like, there's two people on the beach and like kicking the legs, and it's milking a door, I think. And like,
oh, yeah. Yes, those are fun. Yeah, I thought it was really fun too. And I was just thinking about, I don't know if there was I'm assuming there probably was a monitor in the room, but just thinking about if there wasn't, like just having to stand there watching someone dip their head in a pool a couple of times while you're just watching for like 2 minutes.
I was thinking about the effort that went into constructing that, because that was quite a device. The pool with the little plate on the top, and then the camera rig at the bottom, and then the exterior, like that's what they need to be going for an Emmy for this year, set construction.
Yeah, seriously. I didn't think about that, like how long that must have taken
to devise.
Get that, how do they get the water out of it? Or like how do they drain it?
Yes, from inspiration through to conception and execution. You know, Sarge was on his hands and knees hammering that exterior together to make sure that it, and Sarge was the one filling up that little bucket of water.
I don't know if union rules on a set allow the cameraman to do that, but absolutely.
Oh. We also, as pointed out here, had a little investigation into alleged / well, maybe misinformed allegations about Safira and Maya wearing the same outfit, which initially on first, backing up for the makeover, Safira famously had to improvise and come out wearing this orange look, and somebody online pointed out that it looked very similar to what Maya Iman LePage wore when she entered the workroom. However, Jillian mounted an extremely...
We were explaining this in the most long-winded way.
Lengthy investigation. Well, Jillian, I was doing an explanation that was paying justice to your time spent.
My time wasted.
With the twist ending. Care to explain?
Yeah. So basically, people were pointing out that they thought that Safira was wearing a reconstruction of Maya's entrance look as her makeover plan B. And I thought that too. So I did all this digging. I rewatched episodes. I zoomed in. I was going in slow-mo. I was like looking at every detail. And then I went to look at Maya's Instagram and see like, oh yeah, she already posted. She did post a photo shoot in her entrance look. So she definitely has it with her unless Safira brought it home with her. But how could she deconstruct it and put it back in the original form? And then I went to look at Safira's Instagram page and then like the top post in her story was that look and tagging the designer and confirmed she brought that look with her. It was her look, not Maya's entrance look. A Philly designer made that for her for Drag Race. And so it's like after an hour long of doing all this other stuff, I could have just started by looking at Safira's Instagram story that day and had all my time back. But what else do I have to do? But speaking of investigations, something I haven't pursued yet, but so Maya, the new mystery of the season, Safira has this new breastplate, evenly spaced, evenly sized, but she won't say where it's from. She's like using it the whole episode. So now I'm wondering, did Maya leave her this if she didn't leave her the entrance look, or did someone run out and get Safira a new breastplate that fit? I don't know. And so I was trying to look at the one way that we will ID it as Maya's is if there is that drop of sensual sweat that really turned La Roche on during when Maya was wearing at that runtime, but I did
I'm
not
sorry Jillian, do you think that sweat, once it leaves the body, just stays in place?
Well, hold on, wait. Now to this moment, I didn't think about that it was real sweat.
On sweat.
Hold on. Was it really Maya's sweat? I thought it was just like the makeup of the breastplate. I thought it was an airbrush design so that it looked real.
Oh my God, Julia, that is so funny.
So Maya's like what? Her actual
Maya Iman LePage, who had to get help painting or making her dress painted.
Not too much on Maya now.
No, that's our girl. Maya is our girl. But I'm just saying, do you think that Maya Iman LePage cares enough to paint fake sweat onto her breastplate? One streak in the hopes that it would catch La Roche's eye.
I guess, yeah. If it's that versus sweating. Your forehead sweat had, I guess, dripped down through your face.
No, I think it was like her neck sweat.
But then wouldn't it go, is that how tight a breastplate is on your neck?
Or no, it probably dripped off from her chin.
Oof. Okay, well.
But the workroom, but the stage is famously like at like 40 degrees, I thought they all say.
She's flipping her ass off. She's got to sweat sometime.
Yeah, it's true.
All right.
Well. I'm going to paint sweat on the next time I see you and to see if you notice.
You're not right now? That's just all you're drenched in real sweat? Just kidding.
Okay. No comment.
What? You say cut that?
No, that's slobber. Oh. Because no, I said no comment. Oh. It's slobber because you just made me put my mouth on my arm.
That's true.
Orange.
Okay. So it's time to promote their memoirs. The titles of their books are Breaking Wind, The Art of Letting Go by Nymphia Wind, Alphabet Soup, Savor Every Bite by Q, Slewfoot, Embracing All of Me by Safira Kristal, Plane Crash, How I Walked Away from Disaster by Plain Jane. At the cover photo shoot, Rue serves as art director. Nymphia kicks things off in what I thought was an incredible outfit.
It was somehow so good.
Maneuvers herself in these huge, heavy boots into model poses. Q comes in. She really reminded me a lot in the face of Mrs. Kasha Davis with her makeup and this frilly beige version that was the same silhouette that I was kind of complaining about last week that she put her makeover partner in, which you liked, but of the kind of like thin leggings type of pants and then this large loose blouse. Rue also forced her to say the P word a couple of times, which she didn't really seem. She seemed about as comfortable as me saying it here. Safira serves.
Plain Jane?
Yes, that too. Safira serves Cookie Lion with a 15-foot long ponytail and kikis with Rue the entire time. And Plain wanders in wearing an uncharacteristically basic wig and only one shoe, which really seems to irk RuPaul like from the very beginning. Oh, yeah.
It was Maya.
That'd be no shoes in sight. And then during the podcast interviews with Matt Rogers, Plain uses her time to read the eliminated queens and mention Amanda yet again. Safira finally defines Slewfoot and says it makes her walk like a penguin and confesses she was actually a little embarrassed by Rue bringing it up so often at first before she realized that it endeared Rue to her and she learned to embrace it. Q shares more about growing up poor, but finding drag via theater and feeling supported by her single mother. And Nymphia first opens up about traumatic story of being ghosted on a date because she was covered in dog poo on a slide, but then really opens up about her struggles with self-doubt, which partially stemmed from judging herself by Western beauty standards at a young age and thinking people would not find her own natural features attractive, saying that she used drag to, quote, escape my face, unquote, which was heartbreaking because imagine looking at Nymphia in or out of drag and wanting to escape that face. She's such an attractive person, and that just makes me so pissed off at these kind of stereotypes that we perpetrate of what is attractive.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I fully agree. I mean, we really feel for Nymphia, and you can see where a lot of this second-guessing herself comes from. I think just hearing that side of her story, it makes a lot of this other stuff that might just seem like complaining to other people makes sense once you have these pieces of the puzzle. Yeah,
definitely. So what are our overall thoughts on book titles and the photo shoots and looks? Any faves?
Yeah. I mean, Nymphia's is the only one that really stood out. I mean, I thought Safira looked interesting, but I mean, really this challenge just serves as a vehicle for Rue to just get, or I shouldn't say Rue, for the show to just get these sort of emotional story beats out of these queens, which I think is a good idea for a reality show. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think the actual look and construction of the book cover is necessarily something that's fair to judge the queens on because, I mean, like, they're not the ones shooting the photos. They're not the ones designing the cover. So,
They are coming in with their looks and they're posing, and that's something that I think is a fair challenge. But to me,
that's like the least exciting part of this challenge because like there's so much of them that is not involved in the final product of like placing that cover and, you know, designing it and whatever. Mm. I don't know. I think their stories are always more interesting in this part.
I think that's true, but I think it is still partially a branding challenge. So that to me is why it's odd that we see Q come in branding herself as somebody
Q's who was odd.
Yeah, that was just really odd to me. Like wearing a very traditional wig when that's not something that we normally really a silhouette that she's in often aside from her makeover person last week. And so, yeah, I was kind of like, and she came into it seeming to understand like this. She mentioned at some point in the show, like it's branding. So I was a little confused by that. And also Plain Jane, who, I mean, the purple outfit she came in on, of course, incredible. If she wore that in a runway, I would be so happy because it was purple. Yeah. But as a branding challenge, it's like, this is the one time that you're not kind of wearing any of your signature style, or, you know, everyone's borrowing wigs from you, and this is the wig that you end up showing up in, which was a little disappointing.
I agree.
But let's move on to the interviews where they do share their stories. Ooh. We, you know, got to see some people open up. We, Plain Jane was really not opening up too much. And I mean, yeah, I thought that was just like really a missed opportunity. I think she knows enough about the show and what people are looking for to kind of know that this is the moment to be vulnerable, as she had let herself be in the mm-hmm. past. But why do you think she held back here?
I think that there is, and this kind of segues, I think, into what you wanted to talk about next was, you know, me interviewing these same queens, is that I got the sense from Plain's initial interview that she does not immediately open up in that way, in the same way that I've compared to her interview style to someone like Trixie Mattel at first, is her she seems to be, and I don't know if it's like a protective thing or if it's something where it's like branding and building a sort of character that is funny, but it's like you can't tell if she's giving a real answer or if she's doing a bit. And I think that maybe at this point, Plain was committed and knew what her character was on the show and was maybe leaning more into that, because it did seem like she was answering the questions straight on, but she was leaning into this really shady kind of persona. And then when you look at our interview that we did with her, I think pretty much most of that interview was a bit. And I don't feel like I got a real interview with Plain maybe until we did the one on the podcast a few weeks ago, where she seemed, you know, very candid and open. So maybe it just takes a while. There's some people that, you know, on their first interview, they're nervous and they stick to what makes them comfortable. And when Plain eventually opened up to me in that interview a few weeks ago, she was like a great interview. And that's not to say that her interviews weren't entertaining at first. I just think that you can tell when somebody is maybe not interviewing or not responding to interview questions in like a very super genuine way. Like, you can still see Trixie do this sometimes, like where she gives answers, she will directly not answer a question and like answer it with like a joke, but that present it in a way that is like she said it super seriously. And you're just like, okay, well, you just gave me a good story, but like, what's the answer, madam? So I think maybe that's what Plain is doing sometimes, but I don't know. It was a weird mix of things here. And I thought that, like, Nymphia obviously showed us a side of her that I think we really have not seen yet this season. Q's was also a really compelling interview, I think, because she was being genuine and talking about her past and her story with her upbringing and, you know, that hard exterior of Q. I think I like it when that hard exterior kind of breaks down a little bit and we can kind of see the person underneath all that with Q.
Yeah, to me, I just felt that we didn't really see very much of Q's interview. And it was, and maybe because it was a story that she had already shared in the workroom, and she didn't really go into too many more details that we actually saw. Like, obviously, they're only going to show us like a minute of the interview. But I think even though she was saying things that were vulnerable, at the end of it, I was like, oh, I don't really feel that I know so much more about Q. Yeah, I don't know. So I was like a little iffy on that one, or I just wanted a slightly more. But I do want to get your take on the whole podcast interview experience. You are yourself an award-winning podcaster who interviews Drag Race queens for a living. So how did you feel about this as the interview challenge and the technique of I know you had some issues with what Matt said in his confessional about the shade, about not answering as much shade. So I'd like to hear you talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that he gave Plain like the worst interview advice ever. I mean, both for the interviewee and the interviewer. When he said, when an interviewer asks you to be shady, you don't have to. And I'm just like, if you want headlines and you want people to actually read and see your interview and a reason to open up your interview or to click your interview, you absolutely should, especially in this fandom. Like, follow the interviewer's lead because they know what works for a story and what people want to hear. So especially if you're operating in a fandom like Drag Race, what do people talk about in this fandom the most? Drama and shade and like,
yeah,
cat, 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 like stuff like that. So don't listen to that. Drag Race queens, do yes, not listen to that advice from Matt Rogers. Please do not listen to that advice, because
listen to that advice for every interview you do other than with Entertainment Weekly.
But it's just like, truly, like, that is the absolute worst advice. Like, essentially what that advice boils down to is make sure your interview is boring. And like, no, nobody will read your interview if it's boring. So like, when an interviewer is asking you a question and asks you to be shady, like, if you want to be shady, be shady. If you want people to read your interview.
Yeah, it was publicist advice.
It really was. But Jillian, I also have a question for you. On the, you know, the same token, what are your tips for, you know, being such an accomplished and studied Drag Race cue card holder in the room for a Drag Race interviewer?
Cue card. Here's a real tip. Make sure that the cue card letters of the card are not too close to the edges, because someone's hands are going to be there, and I have kind of thick fingers, and so I was worried about, and this is something I learned from watching the behind the scenes on SNL and Wally the cue card guy. You never want to cover the letters.
Answering this question. It is endlessly amusing to me that you are actually answering this question.
Oh, is your advice for the interviewee to not answer the question? Sorry, actually, Matt Rogers told me to say no comment.
Oh my God, Julia, you're just actually like, well, make sure you're holding the card. It's so fucking funny. I also just want to say that I think the banter with Plane when they were all getting ready for the runway, like, I mean, it seems to be this, at least in the show's world and how it's presenting it, like, we are fully past Plane as like this mean bully, and it's now this just fun, kiki thing. And I think that that's what we sort of see. They all are accepting her shadiness. The trajectory has definitely been all over the place. But I think, at least in the show's world and the way that the show is presenting this, I think that it's kind of presenting it as if a like, oh, look, they're all finally like, Plane is just this fun, funny, like, one of the gals, and they're all just like kikiing in the workroom, which I don't fully entirely disagree with. I actually think that as things have gone on, I do think that Plane, she takes a while to get into the rhythm of, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, and, you know, she and I talked about in the interview some of the things that she was saying about Amanda, and if she had known the things that Amanda was going through, obviously she would have pulled back. And I'm not going to sit here and say that, like, the things that she was doing with Amanda sat well with me or Amanda or the fan base. But I do think when you're exposed to something over and over again, week after week, you kind of start to fall into the groove of it. And I do think that it's just like, Plane's rotted. They warned us about this in those first interviews. They were like, that girl's brain needs to be examined. And they all seem to have a good sense of humor about it back then when we did those first interviews last year. So I think the only one who seems to still have, and rightfully so, you know, a lingering issue with it does seem to be Amanda, which that's a whole separate conversation. But I think the rest of them kind of have fallen into this, you know, just accepting that, like, oh, that's just my rotted sister.
Until they all find out that she refers to them as rabble and scraps in this episode and is still being like, oh, I can finally be myself now that I respect people here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. Well, on the runway, TS is back after battling fans on social media over her apparently controversial mild read of Nymphia last week. Instead of Matt Rogers, the judges are joined by Ronan Farrow, who is the person to interview Rue about her memoir. So it is strange he was not the one to interview the queens, but he does make a witty joke about taking a paternity test with the implication he was taking it to find out who his father is. The runway theme is then the terrible Fandango instead of the numerous better fan puns, only fans, fangirling out, fantastic, etc. Q is an orange tutu made out of fans with pigtails made out of tassels. Saphira comes out in what Rue calls
wagon wheel watusi
hair and has a dramatic moment.
That was Myra Escher.
As a dramatic moment where the pleats of her dress suddenly fall into a giant fan made of fabric. Nymphia says she's in an Asian version of Marie Antoinette, which is a miniskirt and made for fans with dragons in her hair. She also has adorable little fans on every fingernail. And I thought it was a funny flame patch over her groin that makes Ronan Farrow make a fire crotch joke. So let's hope Lindsay Lohan was not watching. And finally, Plain Jane has one of those Greek capes over a glittery gold leotard and a see-through skirt. The judges read in the shady way, not the literate way, Q's book title and book cover outfit, but liked that she was vulnerable in the interview. They love everything about Saphira's shoot, interview, and look. They go absolutely apeshit over Nymphia's look, interview, and finger fans. And they drag Plain Jane's tiny, flat human hair as hard as she ran Amanda's all season. And also say her interview lacked any vulnerability. Nymphia then snags her third win of the season to move on to the finale without ever lip-syncing for her life above
what? Above water, because she lip synced against people in the mini challenge.
Her life above water. Oh,
come on,
Saphira.
This is why I'm not in charge of writing this thing.
I'm just reading words at this point. Then Saphira is declared safe and joins her, leaving Q and her current sister rival in the bottom. So, favorite looks.
My favorite look is Nymphia on her book cover still.
Agree.
But I do.
Agree.
And I liked.
I like Saphira's.
Yeah, I like Saphira's fan moment for sure. I was a little worried when she first walked out because I was like, oh, okay, it's kind of plain. But then when the dramatic reveal moment was pretty cool.
Yes. No, I liked that. I mean, Plains, I liked the bodice on Plains, but everything else reminded me of like a combination of, I think it was either Pearl at the season 7 finale or maybe it was Aja's All Stars 3 promo look.
Yeah, that was the thing. And that's why I described it in such a bad way in the script because I didn't even know how to describe it. Like, yeah, she looked pretty, but it was like we've seen it before and kind of that feel the same way of Michelle saying, like, not saying anything negative about Nymphia's look, but saying, I could live without another Marie Antoinette style look. I felt that same way about Plains, kind of this Grecian goddess look, unless you're giving me something different. And I also just, I don't know, there was something about the corset that was like, it looked like kind of too thick of armor or something and gave her these really like wide hips that just, I was kind of like, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't bad. She looked pretty. It just was like there were just elements of it that I guess didn't totally speak to me, but I'm sure other people will like it a lot.
Yeah, it's not her best look. And I mean, I don't think anybody would say that their fans' look was their best look of the season. I don't think any of these queens would say that. But I mean, yeah, at least they weren't bad. There was none that were bad. No. This whole thing just felt like this episode to me, I don't know. It just feels like this could have been a top four. I don't know. Like this episode just didn't seem like it was one where we needed to whittle it down to a final three. I don't know.
I don't agree with that at all. I'm eliminating these people. We don't need a million people every episode.
But I think I like the finale when it's the lip sync battles. And if there's three of them, I'm assuming we're not going to get those. So I just, I like the lip sync battles. I don't know. I'm complaining about something that is not even, it's not a reality because it's not what's presented to us. So like, I don't know. It just felt odd to disrupt the structure like that and be like, okay, we're going to whittle it down to a top three. It just seems arbitrary when they decide to do this and not to do it.
Well, we haven't even said yet if anyone's been eliminated, but I do like kind of a change in form because especially when we start doing the same types of elimination process or finale process in All Stars and Against the World and things like that, that's when it starts feeling kind of monotonous and less special to me. So I think in that regard, I am fairly excited to see what ends up happening. Like I do, I mean, we'll talk more about our hopes, but I don't know. I was actually happy to see that this was finally an elimination episode again. And I thought that they did keep calling it the semifinals so often, which Safira points out in her confessional. Like, I didn't even remember us using that word. And then like when they have Ronan Farrow say it as his like his guest intro of like, it's, I'm so excited to be here on the semifinals. And I was like, is this something that we've always said? Or is that a way to just be like, hey, we're eliminating someone this time?
Maybe. Yeah.
But I was mostly disappointed that nobody took fan to be a more pun route and just like cover themselves in a fabric made of hateful tweets. Capital F fans.
Selena's sign or lamppost, but it's tweets.
Yes, exactly. And my last point on this is that the entire time that RuPaul was doing her critiquing, the way she was speaking reminded me so much of Mama Toon character on Queen of the Tooniverse, the iconic new TikTok account featuring animated characters competing on Drag Race, which is almost better than this season. It was really making me laugh.
Jillian, are you under the impression that Mama Toon is not AI recreating RuPaul's actual voice?
Yes, but the way that it's like just even the pausing and everything about it was so almost like Ru was giving me more AI than I was like almost like, wait, are they AIing Ru in now? It was just like she was the AI.
I will buy that explanation that Ru is giving AI, yes. But I am not going to sit here and allow you to be like, RuPaul reminded me of this AI recreation that is based directly on his real voice. I'm like, okay, Jillian, that might be the wildest thing you've ever said.
Oh my God, no. You remind me of an AI recreation. Okay, so
don't tell Whoopi that. Don't tell Whoopi.
After showing them playfully read each other all episode, Plain Jane and Q face off to a lip sync of Tina Turner's Better Be Good to Me, which, if I recall correctly, is your favorite Tina Turner song, Joey?
Yes, it is. It's one of my favorite songs of all time.
Wow. So ultimately, Plain Jane is declared the winner of the battle and moves on to the finale. And RuPaul cues the sniper to kill Q's shot at the finale and a win. Now, also, if my calculations are correct, they filmed this episode within a month or two of Tina Turner sadly passing on May 24th, 2023, which is kind of interesting. So I want to ask you, do we think that Plain's approach of immediately stripping down into a thin nude bodysuit to shake her giant tatas with nipples so hard they make Minnie Driver look like she was wearing a wetsuit under her blouse in the movie Hard Rain would have made Miss Tina a proud Mary? Or would it have
You better sing. You better sing. You better rolling, sing. You teed it up.
Rolling in her fresh grave. We would like to clarify that Tina Turner was actually cremated. R.I.P. legend.
We would like to clarify that was a Jillian original. That was I had nothing to do with that.
I originally was going to make Jillian you say that, read that part. Okay, but how did you feel?
Yeah, you're trying to shift away from this.
How did you feel about this lip sync and to your favorite song?
Well, not my favorite song of all time, but one of my favorite songs of all time. It truly, like, I have not been this excited for a lip sync song in such a long time. It is one of my all time favorites. It has such emotional significance to me. I love this song so much. I kind of, like, I never wish bad things upon Safira, but I kind of wish I could have seen Safira lip sync to this song because yes. I think Safira would have done absolutely wondrous things with this song. I think that Plain won. I do agree that Plain won the lip sync, but it's for reasons that I know are going to make Jillian Closet uncomfortable because I think she did in the famous cowbell interlude in this song, Plain was just bouncing her little breastplate.
I mean, I think that if she had not done it in the entire premiere episode that she was on in every single performance in that episode. And this was the first time she ever relied on those titties, then I would have been fine with it. I would have thought it was funny. But I think the second she did it, I was like, oh, this again. Even though it had been so long since we saw it, I was just like, of course, no, she knows that this is what's going to be, what's going to appeal to Rue. And so she's going for this immediately.
No, it was funny. It was. It was cute. And speaking of cute. Or not cute. Our dearly beloved Q is the final, well, I guess, yeah, because we're, I don't think we have any other competitive episodes after this. So is our final elimination before the finale. So Q had a really interesting run on this show. I think she had some really great moments, and I think that she has a lot to be proud of. But this was our final competitive episode for the crown. And do we have any predictions on who will win? Because we have Nymphia Plain and Saphira. And what do you hope to see before then?
Well, I mean, I've said for a while now that, I mean, I think since almost the beginning that Saphira is my queen of the season. And I think, I mean, same. You've kind of gotten my head about like talking so much about thinking of the All-Stars aspect of it. From yeah. production of like, okay, whose story will it make the most sense to go on into All-Stars and who are people going to want to see? And I feel like,
Plain,
I don't know, like if it's not Saphira, I feel like then she gets the Shea Coulee storyline and I don't really want her mm-hmm. to have that. I think like this is now her moment and she should, and mm-hmm. she's shown it. And I think if Plain or Nymphia, I feel like people, I mean, hopefully like fans will, I mean, no, fans we know will never stay respectful, but my dream would be for everyone to respect that. But also to love, have those two with such beloved, such strong fan bases of their own that they would be so excited to see either of them in All Stars that it will all work out in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that Plain, there is no way Plain is winning the show. I think that they, production knows they have too much of a good, you know, TV element in Plain that I think that she would be last on my, you know, well, I don't know. Now that I'm saying that, like Nymphia, they know what kind of a performer Plain and Saphira. Like, and they've kind of been polar opposites this entire season, Plain and Saphira. They have been, Saphira has been like this, you know, very maternal, nurturing, but like gives you tough love kind of person who has been accepted immediately by the other sisters. And then Plain just immediately coming in just being this bitch and like just rubbing everybody the wrong way. They're two polar opposites. And Nymphia is just this weird little kooky, just adorable little fashion girl who just kind of occupies this weird space that spaces that neither I think Saphira or Plain occupy. So it's an interesting top three, but oh God, I think that it's, I want to avoid doing what I did last year when I got too in my head in predicting the winner and thought they're going to want to give it to, you know, somebody who is on the rise in the fandom to like sort of ascend, anoint the ascension of like a new star and Anitra who is going to do really well in lip syncing. And I doubted Mother Colby. Well, I didn't doubt Mother Colby. I doubted production would want to, or I doubted production in that moment. But I think I'm just going to have to lean into what my gut is telling me. And my gut is telling me it's Saphira all the way. And that I think that Saphira is an inevitable winner because Saphira, I don't know, would have as much to gain from an All-Star season because I think Saphira went through this season without much of an arc. It was pretty much like Saphira's amazing. Saphira's mother. Saphira is also like Miss Congeniality yeah. in many ways. Yes. So what other storyline does she have left to close except taking the crown? Nymphia has all these other things that she's been building toward overcoming. Plain has been, I don't know if she's been trying to overcome this, you know, image of her being a bitch, but I mean, that's the storyline that's left. What better storyline to leave open-ended than like the bitch of the season comes in, guns ablazing, and then gets her trajectory cut short, and now she has to come back to prove herself again in All Stars.
Exactly.
Like, and Saphira doesn't have an arc like
and
that.
Could either come in as another villain and reign terror over a whole other cast and, you know, have maybe some people that could put her in her place, or have a complete turnaround and be like, I'm not going to be that mean now, or I'll be mean in a funnier way. And then Nymphia, like I would be thrilled with her winning. I wouldn't have any issues with it, but I think that her returning to an All-Stars, she could really show, like, you know, coming in with the confidence in the challenges to really own them and not have the anxiety that she was having in the build up to actually doing them, and just know that she can achieve them, I think would be really awesome to see. And there's just, I think, so many more looks, and I would be so excited to see what else Nymphia could bring to an All-Stars. So, yeah, I guess in that regard, I'm still Saphira all the way.
Yeah, and Saphira, and I don't mean to confuse anyone, like, Saphira is also my personal pick, I think, of these three to win, too. Like, I adore Saphira and her art. I think that she is just such an amazing queen, such a great performer, and I would be so happy to see her win this season.
Well, we shall see.
Yes.
Hugh!
Well, coming up, to answer all of your unanswered cues, we have a interview with our eliminated queen Q coming up. Welcome back to EW's Quick Drag Podcast, the Hooked on Phonics edition, where all letters of the alphabet are important building blocks toward excellence, but none more than Q, just Q. My next guest, who unfortunately met her end on season 16, but I have a feeling will absolutely use the first and only letter in her name to string together a sentence of success after Drag Race. Please welcome the lovely Q. First and foremost, congratulations on everything you did this season, truly.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Of course. I mean, and I just, it was, you know, I mean, given the reputation of dance that you have put forth on the show, I think it was ultimately fitting for you of all people to go out on a lip sync. So, like, do we think this lip sync against Plane is finally the one to beat the can't dance allegations?
I thought I slayed it, honestly.
I mean, I will say this is one of my favorite songs of all time. So I was super, super excited to see this lip sync.
So good. So good. I love that song so much.
Oh, it's amazing. And I want to ask you, because you did, you started, I think, a bit of a lip sync trend this season when you did your little booty tooch, like on the floor, moving backwards thing during your first lip sync, which was repeated by Plasma and Dawn in their respective lip syncs. So was that like something that they told you that they were going to do, or was it like a pact amongst all of you that like they would do that?
The white girls, we just decided that we would make fun of ourselves on national television.
So you're confirming, yes, this is a pact?
Yes, of course.
Well, you know, it was just one of the many things that brought me joy about your run on this season. And I do want to talk about this episode too, but there's so much to cover from earlier in the season as well, in addition to just this episode. Particularly, I don't know if you saw last week, but Morphine in her exit interview told me to make sure to ask you about Maya allegedly, like, picking at you like a little sister from hell and also farting on you on set. Can you please elaborate on this?
I mean, Maya was definitely the undercover menace. Like, there's a side to Maya that we saw that not a lot of the audience got to see at all. So she definitely showed her ass off camera for sure.
Wait, okay, so what was, like, the most menacing thing that she did that we didn't get to see?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, she just very much would, like, talk under her breath, or the way she would, like, it seemed like any time, you know, the camera would be off, she'd get her little jabs in, and then she'd be back to being, like, sweet Maya, you know?
Well, so wait, but so she did also fart on you, like she did to Morphine?
Oh, yeah, she's a menace, girl.
Now, I am going to get into some specific territory here that Morphine said brought up a lot of, like, trauma and sense memory, but I did ask her to recall the smell of Maya's farts. I just want to see if it lines up with your recollection. Do you have a description?
like a hot Miami sweaty swimsuit after it's chafed all day in the sun. Just repulsive, putrid.
Oh my god.
Oh, she keeps going. She's going. Well, Morphine said that it was pork and beans. So you win. And beans.
That actually was Maya's first drag name. It pork was and pork and beans. Yeah.
Well, you heard it here first. So another big moment for you this season, this is radically shifting gears. But, you know, one of the things that I really loved seeing was when you told your sisters about being HIV positive on the show. And I just... I'm always curious about the kind of response that receives after you say something like that on national TV. Like, what has that meant for you? And also, like, what kinds of feedback have you been getting from people watching the show about a moment like that?
That moment was, like, really, really important to me. And, you know, overall, it's been, like, very, very positive. Of course, you get, with everything, you get, like, some people who want to be negative or say something nasty. But overall, like, I feel like just saying that, and the people that have come up to me and told me that it's helped them, that right there has, like, made all the difference and, you know, made it worth it to me.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to hear that you're leaning into the positive sides of that and hearing how maybe that's impacted a lot of people's lives, because saying it on a, you know, amongst a friend group is one thing, but saying it on national TV changes a lot for a lot of people. So I'm glad that you did that.
Yeah, thank you.
And then there was also, I'm curious about your reaction too, to the reaction that, there's a lot of reacting in this podcast, about Plane's reaction in the room, which turned into a meme of her saying, "Mama, kudos for saying that, for spilling." Like, what was your reaction to that in the moment in the room? Did you have any idea that it would become this meme?
No idea, because, I mean, looking back on it and, like, thinking about what she's saying, for sure it sounds a little funny and weird. But she was being, like, completely sincere in the moment. So, like, we didn't even think about it, like, being something funny or something that would be, like, turned into such a meme.
Yeah. So you didn't think at any point when she said that in the room, you were just like, oh, this is just how Plane expresses emotion.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. I mean, by that point, bitch, I know, I knew. I had dealt with all sides of Plane Jane, so yes. That was, like, the least surprising comment that's coming out of her mouth.
Well, I do remember, I think, back to those interviews we did last year, the first time I met all of you, and I think it was you, it was either you or Don that was like, oh, Plane Jane, like, her head needs to be examined, like, that girl, I have no idea what's going on in that girl's head, so.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Well,
that's my sister, but she's definitely touched.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's become it's a slow process, but I think I finally come around to, like, understanding, and it's interesting to see all of you sort of, after initially, like, being like, what the fuck with Plane Jane, now that it's, like, the end of the season, I think it's interesting to see this dynamic where you're all sort of in the workroom just, like, playing off of it and accepting, like, okay, she's rotted, but, like, that's our sister,
right? Yeah, no, for sure. No, we're all, I mean, honestly, everybody was a little bit rotted, so.
That is true. And, you know, you also had the fans talking this season for this recurring narrative of you being seemingly plucked over placing high safe, especially when Safira won the boardroom challenge. That was an interesting storyline in itself. And you said on this episode that you still think you should have won over some people. So I'm just wondering, can we maybe get a tally? Can we clarify which challenges overall you do think, for the record, you were robbed on?
I will say for sure the CEO panel one, the boardroom, that one for sure, hands down. Yeah, I know. I'll say that, though, that's probably the only one for sure.
Well, I will tell you that I think your makeover was my favorite. I'm just going to say that right
you.
Now.
I did love my makeover. I did think that Nymphy or I was going to take the makeover. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought it was going to go to one of us, like, as did everybody. You know, it's funny because, you know, they get me saying all these things that literally everybody else also says.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's you know, this is reality TV, and right. It winning, I know it's, maybe this is an obvious question, or the answer is obvious, but like, winning in a competition setting, it's important. But was there maybe like an added significance of why winning in this particular context week after week was so important to you, even though you had already bagged two wins at that point?
Well, I mean, I just think, like you said, in a competition setting, like if you want to make it to the end, you got to have to keep winning. But, you know, I'm also, I hold myself to like a high standard. And, you know, if I'm not meeting that standard, you know, I feel disappointed in myself. And most of the times that's more of a reflection of how I was feeling than like being upset with anybody else other than, you know, myself.
That makes sense. And it's, a lot of people don't understand a lot of the time what goes on. You know, oh yeah. Like, well,
just like when you think about how much money and time we put into all of this. And like, for a lot of people, this is just entertainment and 90 minutes of entertainment on a Friday night. But for all of us, this is like our careers. This is our mm-hmm. lives. This is our future. So, you know, it's a lot higher stakes than a lot of people than it is for a lot of other people who are watching.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you can tell, especially how much this means to your lives and your careers, based on how deeply we see some of the feedback online, you know, get to some of you. And I think that, you know, you made the decision to walk away from X earlier this year, and that had a lot of people talking. So has leaving X sort of solved a lot of that urge to go online and seek out what people are saying about you? Like, how has dealing with that been since leaving that platform?
Well, I don't think that I ever was seeking out, you know, like for that feedback. I think a lot of times, you know, we get on social media and it populates and
yeah. Yeah.
And in our feed, no matter what, you know, I wasn't on X before Drag Race, and I got on X for Drag Race. So, mm-hmm. you know, the only thing that populated on my For You page was everything Drag Race. So, you know, it's stuff algorithm. I would see. It's, you know, I would just see comments about me being made like all day. And, you know, I just finally was like, you know, I'm going to set a personal boundary, and I got off of it, and you know, it's helped a lot. I still like have moments where it's definitely been harder, and I feel like definitely towards the end, as there are less people, I've definitely become like a conduit for a lot of the negative energy.
Yeah.
But that just kind of happens that way sometimes, and you kind of mm-hmm. just have to deal with it.
Yeah. No, and I think that dealing with it and talking about things like that is sometimes makes it easier. It's always important to clarify. And it makes me think of, you know, this, I even saw Maya joke about this on X the other day. I don't know if anybody had shown you, but there was like a meme of, it was like, oh, Q, when she's talking to Maya, and it was talking about the particular accent. And Maya laughed about it online, but, you know, Naomi and Monet also brought it up on Sibling Rivalry. So I'm just wondering if it was something that you were like conscious of in the moment, or did you realize it maybe after it was pointed out? Like, how do you feel about all of this?
You know, it's definitely something, you know, I had never like really recognized. You know, it definitely was never brought up to me by my sisters or any of the community that, you know, I grew up in Kansas City around.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely was a first, and I've never had any kinds of those issues, like with, you know, people that know me and have hung out with me and been around me. And, you know, people on who did the show with me, like my castmates this season, didn't really get it. But, you know, I'm always open for, you know, conversation about it.
Yeah. No, and I think that's important to be open to things like that. So, but it just makes me also think, speaking of Sibling Rivalry, I'm thinking now, was your robot runway meant to be a callback or tribute to Bob's? Because I saw some people saying that too.
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
Oh, absolutely not. Okay, we are shutting that down. Okay, sorry. Let's move on to the mini challenge this week because I thought it was really, really, really funny. I loved your lip syncing under the water. I thought it was so cute. There was also a big reveal this episode that Safira had an appropriately sized breastplate this time. And RuPaul seemed to clock it real quick and was like, do you have a breastplate connection? So do you have the tea there? Like, did somebody sneak a breastplate in for Safira?
Oh, I think she was able to get one replaced pretty early on. After getting the critique that they were a little bit too tiny.
The Fisher-Price breastplates.
Right.
Oh, that was such a good moment. So let's talk about this, that the main challenge this week, because you did pose for your book cover. And I think we're used to seeing you in these, like, really elaborate wigs and headpieces. So what was the inspiration for wearing, like, a more traditional wig and, like, a loose dress for the branding challenge? And do you agree with the judge's assessment of what they said about you in this challenge?
I mean, at that point in the competition, I was, like, running out of outfits.
Yeah.
So that outfit I made, like, the night before in my hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's not something that we prepared for. You just have to pull from, like, what you have left. And at that point, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of outfits left.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so it's kind of like just how it pans out sometimes, you know?
Well, you do, like I was saying before, some of your runways this season have just been like the goth run. Like, oh my God. I am just, like, my mouth hit the floor at some of the things. I know you said in that first interview, you were like, oh, yeah, like, there's some looks this season. But, like, I mean, there were some looks from you this season. They were so good.
I'm really proud of, like, what I did all together this season.
As you should be. So the last thing I want to ask you is, I mean, we do, usually in the past few seasons, we've seen it be a top four. And there seemed to be some discussion earlier in this episode about, like, is it going to be a top three? Is it going to be a top four? So how do you feel about it being a top three and not a top four this year? Like, do you have particular feelings about, you know, not getting a spot, I guess, in the finale?
I mean, it's definitely, like, a bummer for sure. Yeah, no, it was definitely a bummer, and I've definitely, like, processed that by now.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I don't know if staying longer in the competition has benefited me more, if it would have, like, you know, me leaving earlier, you know. It's always, mm-hmm. like, that kind of toss up with how you're, like, perceived by the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who knows if me even staying this long, you know, was good. So, I don't know. I'm at peace with it.
Is there a part of you that maybe wishes you had gone earlier just to maybe get that sort of robbed narrative that maybe we saw with somebody like Plasma getting?
Oh, I mean, I don't think I, like, wanted to leave earlier for, like, a robbed narrative, but I think that I definitely underestimated, you know, how much, like, being in the public eye would, like, take an effect on just, like, myself in general.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think just being just, like, out of that space for a longer period of time, I think I would, it, I just might have been happier, you know, with how things turned out.
No, I understand what you're saying. Is there maybe something that you would like to say to those people who, about maybe what they don't realize about the effect that it has had on you and that are maybe making this a little bit difficult for you?
I don't know, just try to be more kind, I guess. You know, we're just out here trying to, you know, make a living and, you know, make our dreams happen. And, you know, we finally, like, achieved this huge thing. And, you know, we invest thousands of dollars and hours and just for, you know, for it to be scrutinized. So, I mean, just, I guess, try to be kinder to the people who are on the show.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. I think that all the fans and trolls need to hear that because you're all people and it's easy for them sometimes, I think, to think, oh, it's, you know, big, colorful drag queen show, like these are just characters. But no, there's people underneath it. And I always think it's important to stress that. And, you know, I hope that it gets better for you soon.
All right. Yeah. No, and it's fine right now. I'm not, like, wah, sob story. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm fine and, like, doing great. And you know, receiving lots of love, but, you know, there have been moments where, you know, it hasn't been that all, as well, you know?
Yeah. Well, I wish you all the best, Q. I know this is not the last that we're going to see of you. So I cannot wait to see what you do after this show. And again, congratulations on the accomplishments this year. It's been a pleasure watching you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mama, to the not-so-anon Q for joining us to let out her final feelings on just missing the finale. Please let us know your favorite conspiracy theories in a 5-star review, and might as well hit the subscribe button while you're down there because you never know what'll happen.
Tune in next week to see what goodies we have in store for you after the Lollapalooza episode leading up to the season 16 finale. Until then, ready?
Break wind tonight.
What? You're not going to do it?
I forgot I copied it over into my own doc.
What's happening?
I copied the whole script into my own doc. I'm not reading the original one. Hold on. And I wrote something and I thought you could see it too, but you can't. Okay, wait. Okay, I see yours now. Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
Leave them all
ready?
In.
Ready? Have A, B, C, D,
D, D,
E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O,
P,
Q,
R, S, T, U, V, W, Q, Y, Z, 9.
See, didn't it feel more natural to have the Q there?
That was the most natural thing I've ever done in my life. Quick Drag is an Entertainment Weekly podcast hosted and produced by Joey Nolfi and Jillian Cederholm, produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Thanks for listening.
There's weather. Cloudy weather. Ooh!
Rolling in her fresh grave.